Hello and welcome to a very special episode of Phoenix Cinema Podcast. I am Chris Austin, and joining me today is editor and composer of the podcast, Stefan Krieger. Welcome back, Steph.
Thanks for having me back.
Good to have you. And the reason this is a special episode is because we have a very special guest. And that guest will be most known outside of his home of Sweden to gamers who have played Battlefield and Battlefield 5, as well as a whole host of film and TV projects, including dipping his hand into one of Marvel's many universes with Madam Web. Ladies and gentlemen, put quite simply, he is one of the best composers working today and one of our personal favorites. We are so excited and delighted to welcome Johan Söderqvist to the Phoenix Cinema Podcast. Johan, welcome.
Thank you.
How did I do with the pronunciation? The pronunciation of your name.
Pronunciated. It's. I know it's a bit hard with the O with the dots.
Yeah.
So you have to go more You put your . So it's Söderqvist.
Söderqvist.
There you go.
Do I
so
say
it's
the V?
These kind of Kvist. Yeah, a little, but Söderqvist. It's like Söderqvist. I know it's a bad name, but I'm stuck with it. So.
Not at all. No, I like a challenge.
I remember when I was really small, I don't know the name of these fishes, but there was a really famous opera singer when I was like 7 or something like that, and I wanted to become an opera singer. I was going to a choir school. You had, like choir singing.
Right.
And there was this guy called, in Swedish, one of the fishes in Sweden, big ones. And I thought, I have a really kind of awkward name for international career. And mind you, I was 7 years. So I wanted I took another fish name and said that when I become famous, I will be Johan Kolja. That's another fish. So I kind of had my artist name when I was 7. And then
And then you just stuck with it, yeah.
But the easy way is to say Söderqvist. I mean, that's the way. Just
Söderqvist.
Just skip the dots.
Right, okay.
So when that's clear, let's talk music.
Perfect. Well, that's excellent. Thank you for that. And yes, thank you so much for taking the time to join us and have a chat today. I mean, I don't know if you're aware of this, but film music and speaking to film composers is kind of our thing. I mean, it's all I listen to.
Okay.
I'm sure, Steph, you can say the same.
Absolutely.
And we've had the opportunity to speak to many composers, brilliant composers on here, but it's always extra exciting when we speak with someone such as yourself who we've been listening to and enjoying for years. So,
thank you.
Well, I'd love to start by asking you about your background and your upbringing. So you were born in Sweden.
Yeah, and you got the singing part. I already took that one with the choir school.
Yes, exactly.
That's already mentioned. No, but it started out with music that way, starting at 10 in a famous Swedish choir school. So I kind of came into music, as a small kid. And then we used to sing at the opera, as in a boys choir, in all this Tosca and Carmen and all the things that had boys choir. Then eventually I started playing piano when I was like 13 or something, 12. I actually played before, but I had a teacher who used to take a linjal?
The cane.
Yeah, she used to.
Oh my God.
So I stopped. I started when I was 11 and she hit me. I was like, fuck this. I don't want to do this.
If you hit the wrong note.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But then I stopped. And then it was a super cool guy who went to the musical high school that was, maybe 20 years or something. And I always think of him as he's the guy who changed my life because he was so cool. He was like a relatable age, really nice, cool. He was a jazz piano player. And every time I mention it for him, he's like, no, I didn't do anything. But he did. He kind of made started the fire. You want to become better. You want to practice. You want to be as him. You want to, this thing that it kind of still fuels me. This thing that you always want to be better than the last thing you did.
That's amazing. Are you still in touch with him?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, amazing.
Oh, wow.
But he never kind of understands this thing, because for me, it's much bigger than for him. And I even have this thing that every time I work, I have a teacup. He used to have a teacup.
Really?
So it's always this, it's kind of, it's not, I mean, it didn't influence the music, but it's kind of a thing that music is something that you enjoy. And there was no wrong and no right. And it was probably really good to play jazz, because it's kind of in the, it's in the principles, you know, the starting point of jazz is play, you know, whatever is good is good. And that has served me well with film music too, because what you have to train when you're a jazz musician is your ears. You have to be good at intuitively. Trust your instincts. Because, you know, you have a drummer and you have a, whatever you have, and you have to act in the moment. And it's the same with, I would say, with composing music. It's kind of knowing when it's right and knowing when it's wrong, because it's, God knows, it's a lot of wrongs.
You know? Right, right.
It's a lot of wrong notes. But, but then you know that, oh, this feels good.
Mm. Yes. You know?
And I think that thing that I came from jazz, so I became a jazz musician and recorded and toured a lot. And that, I think that kind of, for me anyhow, it opened up your mindset and kind of, and I played all sorts of folk music too. And that gains me also a lot in film when it comes to, you know, Turkish music or Arabic music or a lot of Swedish music, of course, and Irish music. And it just gives you this kind of knowledge of not trying to sound like something a bit, but really dig into the real thing. It can sound similar, but it's not. You need to go, you know, deep into the culture to understand.
Right. Being a jazz musician, does that mean that you had to do a lot of improvisational stuff as well? And I can only imagine what sort of training, and when you speak about that intuitiveness as a musician.
Yeah, it's. I mean, sometimes I haven't had a time for like 20 years to play and tour, because it's been so much film and games and things. And also I have 3 kids, so I wanted to be not all the time on tour in a way.
Yeah.
At some point it was crazy. I was away 2 weeks, home 1 week, so it doesn't work with the family that way. So I really miss that thing that in a band you take like a mutual, everybody takes some responsibility for the outcome of a musical product. And when you're a composer, you're very alone. I have my assistants and my team that I work with, and thank God for them, but it's still a bit alone.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Because you have to say that, yes, this is good. I think this is good. Sure. But when you're in band, you kind of, you know, but even so, when you're on a film, on good film projects or game projects, you actually, it's a bit like a band. You are like a team, and you kind of, when it swings, it's a bit like that. Everybody, you know, is doing the right thing, and you help each other. So it's like when it's a good project that really, where people listen to everybody, it's really a bit the same.
No, that's excellent. I was also, Stefan, feel free to jump in whenever you have a question for Johan here. But to be fascinated with music at such a young age, how did music enter your life in any significant way? Were you born into a musical or artistic family?
I don't know. This is a tricky question. My father, he is not alive anymore, but he used to be a jazz musician in the 40s, and then he stopped playing and became a pharmaceutical, you know, guy. And he started when he was old again, kind of when we started playing. But that's musical. But my mother, she can't take one note. Everything's wrong.
Really?
So it's like, you never know. So I had like one with Jing and Jan, you know.
Yeah, one
of each. She would always start singing one the key, and then after she had to take breath, she would change key. But I mean, within the phrase, it was right.
Right. Sure.
That's interesting. So you're just moving around So I wouldn't say like a musical family in that way, but my sister wrote songs and I wrote songs. So my father was kind of wanting us to also have the joy of music, you know, and playing.
Oh, good. So they were supportive of
yeah.
Could they detect, see in you at a young age? Oh, this guy. Yeah. Okay. Oh, that's excellent. That's excellent.
And then fortunately enough, I started playing classical piano when I was, 14 or something. And that really helped my technique. So I played a lot of classical piano from maybe 14 to 20 or something. It really made all the difference.
I have heard by a multitude of people, as I'm an aspiring composer too, so I'm around a lot of musicians, and they always say that classical music, studying classical music and taking part in jazz are very important for you very hard to do, but also very important for you to learn.
But having said that, I come back to the thing that when I have people that I train, it's people can be very skilled and very good, but in the end, it's the stomach, the gut feeling, instinct. It's always the instincts. I mean, you train when you write for something, you train your instincts. So you feel that, this is something, this is not good. Yeah. And you don't know what it is. And then you try, now it feels good. So it's kind of, I can feel when I graduated from the musical high school, I was so sharp. I was like a razor blade. And now I'm super stupid. but the difference is, not, I don't think I write any worse. I think I write better. Mm. But I was really sharp and I could do everything. But you have to, you have to give away something to gain something else. Sure. So it's like a balance.
Yeah.
If you're too sharp and too analytic, you will definitely lose something.
Mm.
And if you don't know the things, you basically have to know it and forget it. That's basically what you have to do.
Right.
I would say. Right. And that's very weird. You have to take all these years and learn everything, and then you have to put it away.
And just
trust your instincts. Because you have to know it, because it's so much... how an orchestra formed and how it sounds with brass. You have to know it.
Yeah.
Mm. But you can't kind of think about it because it's not important.
It's very similar to because I'm an actor and I trained in New York, and that's exactly what they say to you in training as well. When you're going into a role, when you're going into a scene, you prepare, you do your research, you make all those choices. But the moment the camera's rolling, you have to forget about everything you've done and trust that it's there. Somewhere, and you'll be able to draw on it. And it reminds me
because it's about feelings. I mean, it's all about feelings, and you have to kind of it's like an inner light bulb. You have to kind of find it and hold it and cherish it. You can't kind of try to think, like how would it be if I did. You have to just be confident and hold the energy.
Yeah,
that's great. That's great advice. Yeah, was there a particular film or film score that really grabbed you when you were younger that kind of helped to light that spark?
I actually saw one of your pods now because I wanted to hear the... Tone, tonality.
How we do,
how the tonality. And I heard a question about Mozart and about Amadeus. And you said, I know the scene you're talking about. And I kind of wanted to ask you if you know the scene I remember, because it's not the same. I obviously remember the last scene with the Requiem that you talked about in the pod, when he writes in the bed and he's sick.
Yes.
That's a great scene, but the scene that stuck with me is a different one.
Is it the one right at the beginning when Salieri's talking to the priest?
No. It's kind of it's not a big scene. It's just he's standing in a room with a pool table. And he's kind of messing around with some balls, like on the pool table. And it's just beautiful music. And you realize, he's so weird. He's so weird. Mm. And he's doing this thing. He's doing his, stupid things. And he's just playing with the pool table. Mm. And then suddenly somebody knocks at the door and the music disappears. And then I understood, fuck, it's his music in his brain.
Mm.
He was thinking of this fantastic music while doing this crazy stuff. And that's been, I've been kind of thinking about that. I mean, not every day, but it's been with me since then, that you can have this kind of beautiful thing within your head.
That never occurred to me.
I maybe read it wrong, but that's how I interpreted it.
Yeah. Oh, I like scene. That. I really like that.
It's interesting. He must have heard it. I mean, he got whatever 36 years old and wrote 600
things. Right.
They must have, it must be like, I don't know how he, these guys,
aliens.
I love Purcell. Purcell is one of my favorite composers. he died when he was so young, and he wrote so much good music. I don't know how they, I mean, even writing it would take more than 35 years.
Yeah. Like,
I don't know if they could, right. Even how putting it on paper.
Yeah, how did they stay so productive? Yeah, it's
I don't know.
It's it like an open line to God. Yeah, but it's the open light to God. It's like just a tap, they just open.
Yeah, yeah. Divine inspiration, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but that was one film that inspired me. I mean, the Amadeus. So it was obviously because it was a composer and he was, you know.
Yeah.
And also I had another film. The first time I thought about film music was a Kurosawa film, Akira Kurosawa film called Ron.
Ron,
about a blind shakuhachi player. And it's just, it's not about him, but he's like the teller or the narrator. But it's just that something happened in that film. I think it's a specific scene where they have a big battle. And instead of having all these cries and blood and, you know, everybody screaming, it was just no sound, all the atrocities on the screen, and then beautiful music. And it was like, wow, was it, you know, I couldn't understand it. So that's a scene that really
contrast,
been...
Yeah.
It's a beautiful film.
My regular co-host Luke, who couldn't be here today, he's going to be ecstatic when he hears you say that Ron is his favorite film.
He loves it.
It's a great film. But it was also, I was maybe 17 years old or something like that. And I didn't understand what I felt. I didn't understand what I saw, and I didn't understand what I felt. It was too much, too big. But I still have it, like a feeling.
Yeah. It stays with you. Yeah.
Yeah, it stays with you, me.
Yeah.
And also one third film that I thought about when I was young was The Mission. I remember.
My favorite Morricone
score. When they go up, it's the best. I think it's also his best. Mm-hmm. When they go up on the fall and they come up and they sing this anthem, this Catholic anthem. It's just so beautiful how it kind of takes in the 6-8 Amazon tribal things into this. It's so great.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
It's crazy that I didn't get an Oscar for that one.
Agreed.
It's crazy. Agreed.
It should have won the Oscar.
Yeah, they overlooked him for too long. Yeah.
But I mean, that one, whatever, I mean, skip the rest, but that one needs to get an Oscar. Yes. It's too good. It's too big.
Yes, too good. Exactly. It's so
and
funny.
It's also about, it's also these, all these films are about, except maybe Amadeus, but it's about pain and, you know, how the music can touch you in a way that you feel maybe nostalgia in some cases, but also pain.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting thing. Probably that's something that's kind of stayed with me.
Well, wow. Going off the back of that, when you're approaching making a soundtrack, so for example, like Battlefield, a large scale war game, how do you balance pain and of course the historical truth of these battles and war, and it's horrible, but also the up-paced action parts where you have to sort of balance emotion with action. How did you approach that in terms of when you made
it? I think
music?
When we, first I have to come clean, I'm not a gamer. So that's the first thing.
Gotcha.
And I think that was a good thing doing the score to Battlefield because I kind of approached it from a different angle.
Right.
I approached it from kind of having a truthful sense of feeling real feelings,
right?
Not only feeling, oh, this is fast or this is slow, but really kind of this is a story about two friends who go to, you know, whatever, and in a more filmatic way try to tell a story. And also, I mean, it's you have to, I think one of the first thing we talked about, me and Patrick, who I co-wrote to it, is you have to stay true because it's so many people who have kind of suffered. So you have to be very respectful.
Yeah.
So everything, I was, and everybody, they were a really good team, but everybody was really on top of trying to be respectful in every kind of aspect of the game. So you didn't try, not to try to capitalize on something as awful as the First World War.
Right.
World War One. And I think that comes, you see it in the first scene, if you have played the game, it's a really horrific start. It just, whatever you do, you die. And it's really crazy. And I think me and some other guy, probably, we had this this thing that it should be names. Many people wanted that, but it was this idea that it's not only characters, but real names.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Because it's like we have to pay respect. It's too exactly. crazy to kind of not pay respect.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that is, I think a lot of that, hopefully you can hear in the music. I mean, it's we tried to put in real emotions because it's very. I read a lot of books about first, what do you call it? World War One.
Yeah.
I read a lot about books of that, and it's just so crazy. It's the first kind of big modern war, and it's just awful.
Yeah, and I think, well, I have played the games before and after, and I think I can confidently say that the work that you and Patrick worked on, which is Battlefield 1 and Battlefield 5, are definitely the most emotional, grounding games that Battlefield games that have been released so far. And I think they've gone now, well, I think after Battlefield 5, they went with Hilde Gunnadotter. She did the next one.
42.
That's right, 2042. And I think it was a very different approach. But then, you know, we know Gunnadotter's sound, and she has a very unique sound, so she's going to use that sound. But yours was definitely more, I'd say, emotionally grounding. Because once you're in, I've played many hours of the games, and when you're there, and you've just, yes, it's a game, so it's supposed to be entertaining, but then during those scenes where something's loading, or you're on the home screen, and maybe you're just sat there for a bit because I'm grabbing a drink, when you hear that soundtrack come in with the vocals and the emotion, it's perfect, because it's constantly reminding you this is based on a real thing, and this shouldn't be taken lightly at the same time.
I think we had to kind of work with that in like a split vision. So for me, it was super important with this respect thing. And once you see the globe, when you're loading and when you're, it's like, this is a real deal.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you go out, you have to get the energy. So I think a lot of the games or the, maps, they had like crazy much energy, but it's kind of, it's not light energy, but it's kind of, it's iron, and we sample so much for that game.
Really?
Millions of things. But it's just, it's very organic.
Yeah.
So when it's fast-paced, it's not a synth playing, but it's like people,
exactly.
doing a lot of stuff, or strings playing. So it's like, it has to have this kind of texture of, it has to be real.
Yes.
You can't fake that, because it's like a responsibility.
Well, I'll confess that, it was actually my brother Stefan, we're brothers, by the way. It was Stefan.
Now I can see.
Now you can see the resemblance.
Now I can see,
And it was our other brother, Andrew, who introduced me to your music. They're both gamers. I'm really not. Okay. And was it? We were away in Portugal one time, and we were staying in this rental, and Andrew was playing your music from Battlefield 5. I think it was Under No Flag. And I remember walking into the room and saying, "What the hell is this? And why haven't you ever shared this with me?" So powerful and gorgeous, and of course that led me down the Sudokfist rabbit hole, and I have to say, your Battlefield scores make for great motivational gym workouts. They are
good.
Honestly,
I should use it because I need to go to the gym.
But no, they are superb, and those Battlefield scores, in my opinion, they transcend, in a way, what they were actually scored for. They are absolutely incredible, moving, thrilling, epic, grand pieces of music, and truly deserve to constantly be celebrated. It's an amazing achievement.
That's real nice of you to say so.
I think it's a good
thing when you write, when two people write, you kind of come with your different sounds, or I mean, obviously we're similar because Patrick used to be my assistant, and now he's a full-blown composer, of course, but he still has a very separate sound. So you kind of add to your own, to different, together we're more than one. Yeah. No, two, sorry, more than two. It's like it's adding, you know, stuff that I don't have, and I will add things that he don't have.
Right.
He doesn't have. Right now we're doing a game, a really interesting game, actually.
You and Patrick?
Yeah, a
Again.
Really interesting game. Yeah.
Wow.
It's not Battlefield 6. it's a Swedish game, a really cool game called Ark Raiders.
Yes,
it's really cool.
Yes.
You know
it's
it.
Really cool.
I'm getting that game the day it comes out. Sorry.
It's really cool. And it's just cool because it's just a very... It's also a lot of the people that were in Battlefield 1 and Battlefield 5.
Oh, right.
They kind of formed a new company called Embark.
Embark, yeah.
And they've done this game, and now I think it's releasing end of October.
Yes.
31st, I think. And it's just a really beautiful world. Like a dystopian, like 2180 or something like that.
Ooh, that's exciting.
And it's just, no orchestra, it's just a lot of these guys.
Here we go.
Ooh,
yeah.
Okay.
So all these modular
synths.
Ooh.
Yeah. And it's arpeggiators all over the place. You know, it's just really, oh no, I'm very small. it's really fun. It's
that's
super
very
nice.
Exciting.
And it's also, I mean, very different from Battlefield, but in some respects it's similar because we had an idea when we did Battlefield, and I would like to try it on you, Stefan. We had this idea that if you play a game and you kind of get stuck, it was actually my son who played, he's a gamer,
okay.
One of my sons, and I got really annoyed that it was the same thing that you heard every time started on. I got so annoyed. It kind of creeped me. I was like, I can't hear it. Because you heard like, he got stuck like 10 times.
Right.
And you would hear it 10 times. So what we did in Battlefield 1 and 5 and now is that we have like 5, 10 variations of everything.
Yes.
And I want to hear if you hear that.
Absolutely.
If you can feel that.
Absolutely.
Good.
Because I think if it's one sound or one score or whatever you're going with, it becomes a bit traumatic in a way because you're losing. So that's the sound you hear when you lose, and it gets a bit repetitive, and it starts to haunt you a little bit.
Yeah.
But when you change it, and I absolutely see what you mean, because when I play those games and you do lose the game, or the game ends, or you've lost the battle, it's always different. And that's what I love about it. It's great, but it's always different. It's not like the same experience. So I think that's a great idea.
And it's actually on the tails also. So you would have it in the desert with Lawrence of Arabia. You'd have like a flute phrase.
Yeah.
But it's not one flute phrase. They're like 13 flute phrases. It's never the same. So it's like everything is... and I think that must be much better because you will always have a new experience.
Exactly.
Whenever you come...
Yeah,
And you know, like a rhythmic thing, you would have like something coming in underneath that flute, but you would have like four variations on the 13 flutes. So you can, you know, you understand
right.
my...
Yeah,
so
yeah,
we
yeah,
have
yeah.
like 13 phrases, but you have four different beds of percussion.
Wow.
So something, and it's not big differences, but...
Subtle differences, but they make they make the difference though.
Because
you know?
You're really good at what do you say? The ear memory. I can translate that. The memory of your ears or what you hear is very strong. So if you hear something once, you will instantly detect it.
Exactly.
So I think that's maybe one thing that at least is good for the players.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, we've mentioned him, so I'd love to talk about, because I'm always really interested in collaborations, and I always find it fascinating when artists choose to continually collaborate with each other. There's one other collaboration I'd like to talk about as well, but we've already spoken about Patrick Andrén. So you know, you've done so much together. You've done two films, the Keeper of Lost Causes and the Absent One, both for the same
and that
director.
That was with Uno also. That was they used to be my assistants. So while they were my assistants, we did those two films, and we did The Bridge, and that was big in England,
which was then remade all over the world.
Yeah.
And were they still your assistants when you made the Battlefield games as well?
No, then we're more like equal composers.
Wow. So how did that? So yeah. So how did
that develop?
So it's
just natural. That's a natural thing, basically. You work with somebody. So he kind of stands on his own and is a great composer. Hmm. And then you work so much. We have a language, obviously, because he's been my assistant for many years. So it's like that's the way we work. It's just that you change the roles, basically.
So
it's a similar way of working, but you change roles when you start. You know, instead of me deciding everything, we decide together. Mm-hmm. So it's very similar. I would send a song, he would change it. He would send a song, I would change it. We would do that even on the bridge when I was on the on the bridge. We were like three composers, but it was still kind of my gig. I got the gig and then I invited them to the gig.
Okay.
Whereas Battlefield is a joint.
Right.
Joint thing. Right. And this other film is, this other game is also a joint venture. Okay.
So I'm curious as to the Battlefield 1 and 5 and now Ark Raiders.
Yeah.
How do you both approach? So if you're both maybe thinking of one particular track for an area of the game, how are you attacking that track? Is it more like you both work on it separately, you come together and share your thoughts? Is it more like you attack this and I'll attack that? How do you...
If you talk about the games, you need to talk about one person more, and it's the audio producer, or the audio director, Bence Payor. He's just great, and he did all the sound for Battlefield 1 and 5, and it's great sound.
Right.
And now he's made even greater sound for Ark Raiders. Oh, so wow. He's like a really important person, kind of fixing it, everything together.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So basically, we will write a lot of music. I think in Ark Raiders, we're up to a full day, 24 hours. We made so much music. But I mean, music is a wide thing. So it can be like a drone, or it could be like a really big piece.
Cool.
But it's still like things, yeah. Whatever, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when something happens, it could be 15 seconds of rah, that's also music, but it's not something you would whistle. But it's, you know, it's, yeah. But it's a lot of material. And we would, I think our process, both me and Patrick, is that you're not so filtered, but you do stuff. And then you filter as you go on. It's usually better than to kind of think too much.
Okay.
Because if you think the song you liked, Under No Flag, I didn't want to show it because I thought it was so naive. So I kind of kept it for myself for a while. And then I kind of showed it, you know, oh, I don't know if you want to hear this song, but it's very banal, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, this is great, do it. And then we did it, you know.
Thank God for that.
Yeah, but it's you're a very, what I try to say is you're a very bad judge over your own work.
Right.
So that's why it's pretty good to be a bit unfiltered and have somebody who can filter it a bit, you know, say that this is maybe not our world, but thank you. We should probably go a little more there.
Sure.
And in that way, you can kind of push up things, you know, go born by inspiration. And then as you come closer to the finalized product, you will have to kind of, hopefully you have nailed the world and you kind of know where to, you know, it's very clear in Ark Raiders. It has a very, I'm really eager to hear what you say about it. We should probably talk once more, Stefan.
Yeah.
When you played it.
Because
it's just, yeah, because I feel that it has a very coherent word. A cohesive, what do you say?
Cohesive
world. It's really kind of playing well together.
Okay.
And that's hard to know when you're starting to sketch, because you start, you know, out there. And
yeah,
you
of course.
Maybe arrive there.
Yeah, you can have 17 different ideas,
yeah,
which they may not be cohesive, but then you end up with this cohesive piece towards the end. Yeah.
Exactly. And also, if you have like 400 sketches or something, there must be like 10 that are crazy and stupid.
Yeah.
But it's okay. And 100 are maybe less interesting, but if you get 100 that are great, then you're in good shape.
Exactly.
You know? So it's like this... trying to nail the universe. And I think for me, and also for Patrick, is, I don't know what you call when you use, when you do food through a, you know, like something that looks like, you see, oh, something like this.
Like a funnel?
Funnel, yeah.
Mm.
Ah. Yeah, you pour things in.
Yeah.
And it goes, yeah. That's, I think, our approach.
Ah.
You kind of do wide, and then it gets more distilled.
Gets narrow towards, distilled, yeah.
Yeah. And you can't really understand before you have heard. You kind of have to embrace it and see how it feels, and then you feel like, ah, this is not good, But this is kind of interesting if you go to the left. So I think I'm very not sitting in front of the piano writing a theme.
Right, okay. Interesting.
It's more kind of trying different things.
Yeah.
I think our excitement for ArcLight has just is risen through the roof on this call. And the thing is also with directors as well, I'm always curious about a director-composer partnership. And it seems like you have a collaboration going with the Danish film director Suzanne Beyer. You've done 10 films together. 11. How has that developed? 11. I mean, that almost seems like a handshake agreement to me now. Anything you do, I'll be there kind of thing.
We haven't worked since 2015 or something, but I did from 92. Her first film was 91. Ah. So I did her first film. And then I did many of her films until 2015. Then she got more like international and in Hollywood and stuff. Mm-hmm. But she's a great director. She's really, really cool. And I also had a very close collaboration with her editor, Pernille Beck. So I would work really close to Pernille, who was the editor. She worked super close with Susanna. So they were like siblings, like this. Uh-huh. And I would work really close to Pernille. So I was kind of close, but more to the one who was close, if you understand. and then we used to, I mean, we would always meet and mix and everything. But it's also, it's not always that you work every day with the director. But if she had a full mandate to kind of work with audio and things. So it was a really, I'm really proud of these films, actually.
That's amazing, yeah, because she was there from the early days, right, of your...
Yeah, it was my first film.
Wow. Ah, yeah. Wow, that's so special. Wow.
Yeah, and it's... I thought about it today, before this meeting, that it's kind of... I didn't have one thought about coming into the films at all. Mm. I was a musician. I was playing. So then I played on a documentary, I played piano on a documentary. And he said, it was the second film. It was two films same year, 1990, and they came out in 1991. Mm. And he said, couldn't you compose my next score? And I was like, what? Why? You know. Yeah. And then I composed his score. And the other one with Susanne, it was the same thing. I was playing in a theater, folk music. And she knew the producer of that theater, so she wanted a composer also through playing. You know, it's just weird. Or composing for the theater, I don't know. But it's just, it's this weird sliding doors.
Yeah. That's so interesting. I've always wondered if I just stopped wanting it so much, maybe then it would just come, you know?
That's I think about that all the time. I think that's probably what we have to learn
in this life.
Because every time you stop yearning for something, it comes.
Something comes, yeah.
It's crazy. But you can't say... Now I stop. You can't say that.
You do it intentionally. It's not going to come.
You have to really feel it. I had one of these, you say epiphany?
Yeah.
You know, I had this thing. I was on a plane. I had made a really, really tough thing, whatever. I don't know what it was, some 10-hour TV series. And I was going for a vacation. I was really tired. Mm. And I was like, ooh, get away. And then they called. I felt like no more. Just have some space. And then the moment I kind of said that, I don't want anything more. I don't want, you know, anything. They kind of called, same second that I felt that, they called from Hollywood from some big thing. It was like, I really felt it in my stomach, you know, like, I don't want to do anything. I just want to be free with my family now. And I was like, King, I was like, hello, we want you here. And I actually said no. But it's just this thing that you have to really feel it in order for this weird thing to work.
When you said... Fascinating. When you said no to it, was there a part of you that was kind of like, should I have done that? Is this going to...
No, not at that time, but after, of course.
Mm. Right.
After, I mean, after was like, oh, I should have said it. But at that time, I was really, truly, I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
Because I had been like 18 months of 20 hours a day, you know. Crazy, and everybody hated me and my family because you know, and it's like we have to make up. Now you have to make up for time. So not at that specific moment, but you know, 4 weeks after, it's like, oh, I should.
yeah.
Well, I mean, speaking of, you know, big opportunities, you've also entered the Hollywood blockbuster arena, most recently with Madam Web. That film was directed by S.J. Clarkson. I assume she loved your work on Anatomy of a Scandal, which was the Netflix TV series.
Yeah, we did
TV
that, Netflix, yeah.
You did
Netflix
together. Yeah. How did you feel about that? I mean, that was huge, right?
It's basically the same thing, I would say, you know, except from... maybe it's a difference when you go... There's a way of approaching filmmaking maybe in Europe versus America maybe, you know. So it's maybe a bit more collaborative in Europe, whereas it's maybe more steered in the States. Maybe, you know, it's more... but other than that, it's just a very... when it's very high stakes and big budgets, it's a bit tough.
Right, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But it was great to work with SJ. I mean, she's a great director. And we had a lot... I mean, we did... when we did Anatomy... also recorded in London, I think, because it's about the parliament and, you know, it's, talking about the, what's it called, funnel, this thing?
Yeah, the funnel.
Yeah, so they made a good use of it. So they took different sketches and they kind of mashed them together. And then we got them back and we kind of recreated the weird mashed, I mean, to start with, they were crazy, the sketches, and then they kind of even made them more crazy, and then we remade them, and that was an interesting process, and I think the music kind of reflects that. It's a bit strange, in a good way, in a good way.
Yeah.
So you got, like, inspiration back from her editor and from SJ, and then we could kind of, and that makes that TV series have, for me anyhow, a pretty strong identity, in a way.
It's so interesting, yeah, because as I was looking at your filmography and looking at Madam Web as well, Madam Web is part of what is called Sony's Spider-Man universe. And say what you will about the films, but they are always making interesting choices for the film composers on those films. Ludwig Göransson scored Venom, John Ekstrand scored Morbius, and now you've scored Madam Web. It appears Swedish composers have the monopoly on that particular franchise.
That's good. That's good. That's perfect. That's perfect. I didn't think about that. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
I think it's actually driven by directors, and at least when it comes to two of them that you've worked with them before.
Right.
You're right. You're right. It's a Swedish enterprise.
Yes, yeah. It is. It's funny. Myself and Luke just spoke on the podcast to Yevgeny Galperine, who scored Kraven the Hunter. Alongside his brother Sasha and Benjamin Wolfish, I believe. So yeah
cool.
A very interesting trend of choices being made there, which is great. Have you heard any score recently that you've particularly enjoyed?
I'm a bad score listener, but that's not because I don't like it. It's nothing like that. But it's more like this will sound so pretentious and weird, but I tend to listen to pods that, like this, or, you know, like news pods and stuff, especially with the situation in the States, you know, just listen to stuff that happens. And I don't know, it's probably because I have so much sound all the time around me. So it's just that I really like to hear people tell stories or hear about history, you know, whatever.
Right.
So I'm a bit bad listening to, and when I listen to music, I kind of tend to listen to my favorites. It could be anything from Purcell that I said before to, I used to find a fantastic piano player. I don't know her name. She's from Georgia. She played Handel. It was just amazing. You know, I kind of find this, that you really want to dive into and listen to.
Yes.
I love French composers. I love Ravel and Debussy. It's probably, I have this kind of, I think I'm very into to chords and harmonic structures, and they're so good at that. And when it comes to film composers, there are so many good. One that I always think is a bit underrated in a way is Newton Howard. Everything I hear from him is great.
Yeah.
But nobody kind of talks so much about him. So that's really interesting. I think he's top notch all the time.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, agreed.
That's really interesting.
He was going to do a live show here in the UK at the South Bank Centre in 2020, yeah, and they cancelled it because of COVID. Oh. And he has not rescheduled since. And me and Stefan are just waiting for it, you know? Yeah.
He has very good sensibility, very good taste, I think.
Yeah.
And also, what is his name? I don't know the name now, but I love his work. The Canadian that did Life of Pi and especially Ice Storm.
Life of Pi. I'm going to have to look this up now because it's gonna bug me otherwise.
I feel ashamed that I don't know his name, but I still said I love him, so that's a good
one. that's good enough.
He's called Michael Michael Dania. Michael Dania.
Michael
Dania, yes.
And I also think I love him because he's doing the thing I think is so important with folk music. He really knows Indian folk music. So when he writes in that style, it sounds real. Yeah. It's not kind of this fake thing. And for me, that's super important. So he has this kind of knowledge of different instruments and different instrumentalists and stuff.
Mm.
Have you ever considered doing any live show performances now that we're talking
about? We did once. Kon-Tiki was performed in Krakow. It was a great, great, great concert in a big industrial complex. Maybe, I don't know, maybe 5,000 people or something like that.
Wow.
3,000. And it was like this huge industrial, you know, whatever, plant. And it was, they live streamed the Kon-Tiki film about, you know, the explorer going to, I don't know if you know the story. He went on a raft.
Mm-hmm. I don't know the story no.
It's a great story. In the 40s, he wanted to prove that they went with the currents. So it was a scientist. I mean, it's a real life event. It has happened. And he constructed a raft and they went with the currents all the way to Polynesia.
Jeez.
He wants to show that they came from Chile. You know, out to the islands.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a great film and it's a great story.
That can't have been an easy journey.
No, and it's a really interesting film because talking about the things that you're a bad judge in your own work. I remember when I saw that film, it's a lot of things that happen in New York and it's from Norway, in Norway. And it was so interesting. I loved it. And then they go out into the sea. In the second half of the film, they're on the ocean on a raft. And I always thought that this would be boring, you know. They will go on a raft for 1 hour. But it was the total opposite. The start of the film is great.
Mm.
The raft, that's where the magic happens.
Ah.
Because they, you know, they did this fantastic CGI with the whales and the, you know, all the things.
Yeah.
So it just become like a magic journey. It's a really good film, actually.
Oh, amazing.
It wasn't Oscar winning, but it was Oscar nominated.
Not
music, but film.
Well, would you consider doing it again? And would you consider doing it?
I would love
here
to
in
do
the
it.
UK, please.
I would love. It was a lot of work, though. I mean, because they synced it with the film.
Yeah. Yes.
So what happens is that you do what you have to do when you do a film, and you kind of, you know, you grab, you need something, and you do, you know, you do whatever you need to get the film scene fixed, and then you have to recreate that.
Yeah.
Into orchestral context. Right, and it's not, I mean, we had a genius from Germany called Stefan, and he kind of transcribed all my craziness into like an orchestral score with stems, with all my sounds.
Right.
Also,
right.
They were playing sync, but he was kind of fantastic. I would never have been able to do that, you know, all the weird things. So I think it craves, you have to work to get it sound as good.
Right, right.
You know, I don't think my music is so orchestra. I mean, it definitely is orchestra, but it's not super orchestra heavy. It's very hybrid, I would say, personally.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, even if you were just to do it off Battlefield, I mean, if you...
We did Battlefield.
No, oh no.
We did in Stockholm on an opera. Yeah, we did in Stockholm. But it was kind of a fun thing. They did, when they turned 30 dice, they did a like Jubilee concert, and they did maybe, I don't know, 9 or 10 or 12 performances at the opera, and it was all the different Battlefields. Not all, but many of them. It was Michael Carlson, and it was the guys from Battlefield, Jukka, and from Battlefield 3 and 4, and then it was me and Patrick, and Hildur.
What a lineup.
I mean, how much does this hurt to have missed this kind of experience?
This is killing me right now.
So they were kind of making, I think we had maybe, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes each. So, and then they had a light show and whatever.
Wow. Well, yeah.
It was kind of, but it was also very big, not for us because it was 20 minutes, but for them, for DICE, it was a huge undertaking. I mean, it's a lot of, it takes a lot of things to kind of convert it into to concert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would love to do it.
Oh, we go to live film concerts all the time. If you came here and you put something on at the Royal Albert Hall or the O2, I can tell you now. You've got two tickets already.
That's really great.
Done already.
If that helps you make your decision,
that's really good.
Excellent. All right. Well, I guess
two out of like how many 2,000?
Yeah, how many 2,000? But it's a start.
I don't know. Is there anything else that we haven't touched with? Like anything?
I just had one more question.
Go for it.
I was just curious what you are most proud of that you've worked on, or if you have maybe a favorite time, a period of your life where you were working on something, or maybe a single track or song that you're really most proud of that you've worked on so far.
That was the first sigh today. I don't know. I think I can answer it, but I try not to think that way usually, because it's kind of counterproductive in a way. It's better to think that you've done some stuff and now you want to do the real good stuff.
You're onto the, yeah.
So that's kind of how I try to think. But if I kind of put myself out on myself and look at it, it's pretty obvious that we did some good stuff on Battlefield, considering kind of what it was, and you know, this gaming environment and stuff.
Yeah.
So I think I'm proud of the effort we put into that, and kind of emotional impact it had. Maybe if I talk about film, I would say Let the Right One In, because it's kind of also a very close story to me, because I was like 11 and alone in a snowy Sweden, and you know, my parents got divorced, and I kind of could really empathize with him. You know, this kind of, it gets a bit lonely sometimes when you're 12 years old, and I could really sympathize with him, you know, in a way. And also that Thomas Alfredson is a genius, so it was just nice to be close to him. Just sit with him was kind of nice.
Johan,
and a very nice genius. I mean, like, he's a very nice person.
Oh, okay.
How did you know that was the next thing, that was the final thing I was going to talk to you about, was Let the Right One
But it's just, I think it's for me, it was, I kind of, you always go through some stages and you never know when they come. And I think that was around that time, I think it's 2006 or something. A lot of things had aligned to that. We did a film with Susanne Bier called After the Wedding, also a great film. And it also, this, when I started to write more like sound, I did all my own sampling, and I used to kind of a bit more intuitive. So I kind of changed a bit my way of writing.
Yeah.
If I wrote more songs in the beginning and more kind of maybe orchestra stuff, I kind of changed it around 4, 5, 6. And I think that defined where I went after that. So I think that's why I think. And it was also interesting because when it came out in Sweden, I think they thought it was a pretty weird film. And then it went around the world, a full lap.
Yeah.
And then everybody in the world loved it. And then when it came back to Sweden, everybody, it's the best film ever. We love it. So it had to go out and it had to come back.
Yeah,
and now they're very proud and they think it's really good. But it's kind of interesting with a small country, you know, you shouldn't think that you're better than anybody else. And, you know this kind of mentality.
That's very interesting. That's interesting in itself. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is fantastic, an amazing film. I'm curious, did you ever see the American remake by Matt Reeves?
I actually got I had the option to write it, but it felt weird to do it because it felt weird because it's the year after, and it's just, it felt weird. It felt like you were cheating or something.
It was very soon, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So I probably should have said yes, but it felt weird to me.
Right, fair enough.
It just felt, I probably should have done it, but I didn't.
Do you feel like if you did take the opportunity that you're, there's something in your head that would be just kind of attached to what you did already?
I don't know. I thought it was a bit unfair to Thomas. I thought it was a bit, but I'm probably wrong. I was probably in another world. I should have said yes. And maybe they talk a different, I don't know. Maybe they talked to 10 people, but I know I got the call.
Right,
And it felt strange because it felt like we just did it and it was great. And then it felt weird to redo it
a year later.
Just because they don't want to see subtitles. It's just like, look at the film. You know?
Yeah, just watch the original.
And I know the new film is good too. So it's nothing against the film. And I know it's great. But it's just, it was a bit too close probably.
Yeah. Okay.
So you have your own...
That makes sense.
You know what... Yeah, you know, you're kind of writing something, you're invested in it, and then you should kind of align to something new. Because it could very easily become that you're just copying yourself. Like, and probably that's what they wanted, I would think.
Mm.
They probably wanted it to be the same.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think.
That's a very interesting... I didn't know that you were asked to do it. But I am, in a way, glad that you said no, because one of my favorite composers, Michael Giacchino, ended up doing the soundtrack. And I think both of yours have such different vibes, but they work so well with the film, with each independent movie.
Good. I haven't heard it, but I'm glad, because that's how it should be.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Probably had the same kind of feeling that I had for the first, you know, that it's a great story. It's a great story.
It's amazing.
But they did a TV series. They did a TV series also now.
Did they?
Yeah, yeah. It's been a TV series.
Swedish
American.
Oh,
yeah. I don't know which channel, but I know that there was some buzz and asking, you know, around.
Please just leave it as it's perfect. Yeah.
Is there anything I don't have? I just want to make sure that we haven't forgotten anything important here.
Please, if there's anything, you'd like to, then please do let me know. Otherwise, I'm happy to wrap it up here if you are. Excellent.
I'm happy, and I should also say that this is English tea.
It is okay.
The best tea
from Fortum and Mason. It's the best.
Oh, perfect.
If you're allowed to say that on a pod, but
yeah, exactly.
Otherwise, you can take it away.
Fortum and Mason will sponsor this episode only.
Yeah, they should.
All right. Well, Johan, thank you so much for joining us today. It means a lot, and it's been such a pleasure.
It was great talking to you guys.
Like I said, we listen to your work on rotation, so to get the chance to meet you has been amazing.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Don't forget to call back when you started playing the
game. Raiders, I am going to be on that the day it comes out. I'll play it a bit so I can get the music, take it.
You'll
in.
Let
and
you know.
I think the record comes a week after, so you can wait for that too.
Okay, yeah. Perfect.
And that's probably going to be the only thing I experience of it is just your music. So I'm really looking forward to that. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the bad thing, because if you want to hear the music from these games, you should probably go to YouTube, because they kind of stream, they kind of, what do you say, rip it?
Oh, the walkthroughs.
Yeah. No, they rip the kind of end of rounds, and you know, there's so much music that you don't hear on the records. It's like hours and hours and hours of records out there. So you would have like, I know from Battlefield, they would have all, you know, Stefan, all the end of rounds.
Yes.
Like 2 hours of them. They're up on YouTube. So you can hear, it's so much music that's not out on Spotify.
Yeah, it's true, actually.
Oh, that's available now with Battlefield. I need to look at that. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's my
and
evening,
also, so I think it's the same. I think it's same with this game. They kind of gamers are very devoted, so you know,
yes,
everything you do will be out somewhere, and you know,
right,
you will hear it somewhere.
Fantastic! I'm going to look at that straight away. Yeah,
yeah,
excellent. All right, well, maybe we'll speak soon, Johan. Yeah, excellent.
It was really nice talking to you.
And you take care of yourself, and we look forward to hearing whatever you do next.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, folks. That will be all for this episode. Our episodes are composed and edited by
me, Stefan Krieger. You can find more of my, you can find my music on stefan-krieger.com, where I have some of my scores and my soundtracks and animation. And I'm also working on an album, which I should be releasing soon, a R&B album. So stay in tune for that. That will be on the website also.
And it's excellent. You hear it from me. Thank it's you. Excellent. Like, rate, and subscribe if you like what you're hearing. We have plenty more for you to come. Once again, a massive thank you to Johan Sudekvist. We will see you next time on Phoenix Cinema Podcast. Bye for now. Yes, no.